Welcome to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast, proudly presented by Butler Snow, where we cover topics of interest to lawyers handling appellate matters in Texas courts and beyond. This podcast demystifies appellate law and pulls back the curtain on the appellate system through conversations with judges, court staff, and top trial and appellate practitioners. Listen in to discover best practices and tips for successfully presenting your case, managing your docket, and promoting efficiency through legal technology. And now, here are your hosts, Todd Smith and Jody Sanders.
Welcome back to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast. I'm Todd Smith.
And I'm Jody Sanders.
We are celebrating our 100th podcast episode today. So Jody and I are here to talk to you about that and kind of go over maybe some things that we've learned over 100 episodes of podcasting over just over 2 years now. And also, we thought we would kind of distill down, I think our attempt was to distill down sort of our top 10 tips that our guests have been so kind as to leave us with on the show. So we may have a bonus tip or two as we get into this, but that's kind of what we're going to do for today's setup. So Jody, let me kick it over to you. And what is sort of your big takeaway, I guess? We've been doing this for, as I said, over 2 years now. It's been, we talk about it all the time on the show, how it's been a positive experience for us. But what's your big takeaway from doing our podcast for the last 2 years?
I think that there's a couple. The first is, frankly, I'm kind of shocked that people still tune in and listen to us. I mean, it just is amazing to me. I was excited about this when we first talked about it, and I love doing it, but I'm still kind of amazed that we've done 100 episodes. Like, that just doesn't seem real. And really, maybe once or twice a month, if I'm at some kind of event where other lawyers are, they'll come up and say, "Hey, I love the podcast." And that always makes me feel great to know that people really do enjoy it and look forward to it and listen to it. So I think number one is I appreciate that there's an audience out there that loves to nerd out on this stuff like we do. And thank you for that. And keep listening and keep telling us that you like to listen, because that makes us really happy. But I think my bigger sort of takeaway of substance is that there is no one right way to do this. We've talked to a lot of people in a lot of different roles in the appellate system, in the legal system generally. And I think it's just amazing to see the diversity of creativity and background and practice that people bring and can be successful in their own way in so many different ways. So I love that. I think the other thing is that, you know, it has reinforced for me, everybody in the system, the legal system, the appellate system, whatever system you want to call it, is a human being. And the vast majority of them are trying to do the best that they can. And we can agree on whether it's good enough, and we can agree on where, you know, we can disagree on whether we think that their approach is right or their goals are right, but everyone really is trying to do their best and make it the best system they can. It's great to have that reinforcement by doing this for me. It's just to see all the people, because, you know, particularly in the appellate system, you don't have a lot of interaction with the decision makers, the judges, the process. I mean, so much of it is spent on our laptops and on our computers reading and writing. And then you send a big stack of paper over to them. And then maybe you get 20 to 30 minutes for an oral argument once. And then you get a decision months down the road. And so I love getting to kind of talk to people at all aspects of the decisions, you know, the judges, the clerks, the staff attorneys, the practitioners. I don't know. That side of it is something that I have loved to see doing this.
Well, of course, I agree with you. And, you know, we did start this off as the Texas Appellate Law Podcast. But one thing that I've been happy to see is how much traction we've gotten online just through the appellate Twitter community and people sharing our episodes and commenting and complimenting our episodes. And, you know, when we've approached folks from out of state, the fact that we're in Texas and the fact that our podcast is called the Texas Appellate Law Podcast has not been a barrier. We've attracted some very high quality guests from other states, people who really don't have anything to do with Texas appellate law specifically. But I think what we found is that there are commonalities, certainly starting off during the pandemic when everyone was sort of so desperate to talk to other people on one hand, and on the other hand, had a lot of time to give, helped us out a lot. But so I guess that's sort of one of my takeaways from this is I've just been super pleased and impressed that so many really high quality people have been willing to give us their time and to share their specific thoughts and help us get to know them better. I mean, it's, if you're a listener of the show and you've paid attention along the way, you know that we really don't dive into meaty substantive issues on many of our episodes right away. You know, we like to take the time to get to know our guests a little bit and humanize them somewhat because, you know, even today, especially among the judicial guests, you know, it's difficult to do that just in day in and day out. So it's a real opportunity. I've seen it as a real opportunity for us to get to know our guests better ourselves, but also to help portray them, you know, as people and help them either become known or get to know our folks better. And so it's that has just been one thing that's really surprised me is that, you know, when we first started, I kind of thought, well, maybe we'll sit around and talk about, you know, what the latest Texas Supreme Court decision or some procedural issue that only folks like us could really nerd out about. And it's really just kind of gone in a completely different direction from that. We will do that. And it's fun when we have substantive episodes. But really, to me, the value in this has been in the connections that we've been able to make, the people we've been able to meet, and the information that we've been able to provide to our guests, just in a format that's just so easy to consume. You know, it, turn it on in your car when you're out exercising, or if you really like to just scan the text, you know, we've got our webpage that's got transcripts of every episode on it. So I don't know really what I expected when we started, but, you know, I've been super pleased at how it's gone. And we've made the transition from my change in my law firm. I just want to give a quick shout out and say thanks to Butler Snow for the role that the firm has taken on in helping to manage this. It's really helped me personally. And also, I want to go ahead and acknowledge our sponsors before we dive into our tips. Court Surety Bond Agency, which for appellate lawyers, is, you know, if you practice civil appellate law, that's an entity you ought to get to know because eventually you're going to need a bond of some kind or advice on a bond. And they're so really freely giving of their knowledge and information on that. And then, of course, Thomson Reuters, which most appellate lawyers I know are pretty partial to Westlaw, and I'll admit to being one of those. And so, you know, we were very conscious from the beginning when we decided to entertain the idea of having sponsors that we wanted them to be organizations that really fit with what we were doing in the topic of the podcast. And I think we've been successful at maintaining that. So give a shout out and thanks to those folks. And I want to thank you, Jody, because really without you, as I've said on this show and on other podcasts that we've appeared on together before, I don't think we'd be here. I'm pretty sure we wouldn't be.
Yeah. I never could have gotten it off the ground on my own, and it wouldn't have been nearly as much fun either.
Yeah. And so it's been really, really great for you and I to become friends and get to know each other going through this process. So yeah, we can shower our bro love on each other, you know, off the air.
That's right.
But it is, you know, it is always nice when you come across another professional who handles themselves and in the way that you think, you know, things ought to be handled. And so it's been a real pleasure so far. And I look forward to doing, you know, the next 100.
Yep, exactly.
So, all right, with that, then I think I will start us off with, we'll just call it a top 10. And maybe, as I said, we'll have a bonus or two. But the first, these are going to kind of more or less be in chronological order. So no order of preference for sure. And so the first tip that I wanted to cover was we had Judge Emily Miskell from Collin County come on the show back when we first started. And she talked a lot about Zoom hearings, but we gave her the opportunity to give a tip. And her tip was to make your decision maker's job easy. And so she gave the example of if you go into court and just say, well, Judge, whatever you think the right thing to do is here, that really isn't the right approach to getting the court to make a decision. You're asking the court to do all the heavy lifting. She said something to that effect, as I recall. And so this applies really not only to trial courts, but also to appellate courts, because, you know, if you go into some kind of contested hearing in a trial court, my practice is, and it's very common, to go in with a proposed order, laying out exactly what I want the judge to do. But the same concept applies in appellate courts in terms of, obviously, with motions, you want to be that specific, but also in your briefs. You know, you've got to think about what relief am I asking the court to give me and be very, very specific in that. So, you know, Judge Miskell gave the good advice of instead of asking the court to do whatever it thinks is right, in which case I think her point was, well, it's really a lot easier for me to deny that kind of relief when I don't really know what you're asking for. I can just deny you relief. Her tip was to offer a plan to the decision maker and to not make the decision maker do all the work to come up with what the outcome ought to be in a case. So that one just got kind of stuck with me this whole time and thought it'd be worth highlighting in our conversation today.
Spend less time analyzing data and more time digging into the facts with litigation analytics on Westlaw Edge. Powered by the largest collection of federal and state dockets, litigation analytics instantly aggregates data points to produce information such as likely timeline, outcomes, representation, and damages from which you can base your case strategy and assess potential litigation costs and resources and position yourself for success. Gain a strategic edge using data-driven insights with litigation analytics on Westlaw Edge. Our next tip is kind of a combined tip, both from Justice Ken Wise of the 14th Court of Appeals and then Chris Attig, who is a veterans claims attorney in Arkansas. And I think the distillation of both of their tips was essentially learn and practice your craft. And Justice Wise in particular talked about writing and said, you know, you don't have to be a great writer, but you need to strive to be the best writer you can be. And you need to practice to make yourself better. And in particular, when you have appellate justices who have to read these really long, sometimes very dense, complicated briefs, the best writing that you can do is the key to success there. Because if they can't follow your argument or they don't want to follow your argument, you're missing a huge opportunity to persuade there. And Chris kind of said the same thing, you know, pick up the books. He mentioned Judd Aldersert's Winning on Appeal. I think he talked about Ross Guberman. You know, there's so many great resources out there about how to make yourself a better writer. And that doesn't mean you have to be the best writer, but you can certainly continue to strive to be a better writer. And I think that's absolutely true. You know, just continue to learn and continue to practice. The other thing that Chris kind of added in at the end that I really appreciate is make mistakes and learn from them. There's some sort of something, and Blake Hawthorne won't admit this, but I think there's a ghost that lives in the e-filing system that every time you push that filing button, they go in and they mess up some of the citation formats and they put in punctuation where it's not supposed to be. And, you know, those are pretty harmless mistakes, but sometimes you make bigger mistakes than that. And that's the way that we learn. And that's the way that we get better. And so accounting for those, digesting those, and marking off that you won't do it again, I think is super important.
So tip number three comes from Texas Supreme Court Justice Brett Busby. And I sort of summarized it as address the court's questions at oral argument, which is good advice. I think all appellate practitioners who have done this for any length of time would agree with that. But Justice Busby told a little bit of a story where he said that while he was on a panel in the Court of Appeals, when he was still a Court of Appeals justice, that I guess it was in the briefing, perhaps, one side had essentially described the other side's argument as being disingenuous and didn't really provide a substantive response to it. So naturally, that left the court, the panel, with some questions. And so they had a pre-argument conference and decided to just come out and ask a really pointed question and ask the advocate to address, in addition to whatever else they wanted to talk about, the particular issue that they had not substantively addressed in their briefing. And the advocate came to the lectern and said something to the effect of, well, I guess I'll just throw out my outline now, since the court had asked them to address this particular issue. And I mean, the advisability of taking on that kind of a statement to the court seems fairly obvious, but really, I think Justice Busby's overall point, the real tip here was the court is telling you specifically what it is it wants to know out of the gate. And so as an advocate at oral argument, you know, your job is to help the court. And if the court is going to go to the trouble to specifically tell you this is an issue we're really interested in, the right approach to that really is to put everything you have into addressing that issue. Maybe it doesn't fit precisely with the outline that you prepared for the oral argument. But clearly, if that's what the court is interested in, frankly, you do need to be prepared to throw out your outline, because you might spend the whole of your argument time addressing the issue and then responding to follow-up questions. And so that's part of the flexibility that advocates really need to have at oral arguments, to be able to pivot when you get a tough question like that. But when the court really sets the stage on what it's interested in, take the time to thoroughly address the court's question before moving back into the outline that you've prepared.
I think that's a great one. Our next one comes from Kevin Dubose by way of Skip Watson. And it is, opposing counsel is not your enemy. And Kevin was telling a story about when he was interviewing Skip for the appellate section's oral history project. And I'm just going to read what Skip said to him, because it kind of leads to the tip. And he said, "Kevin, the opposing counsel is not your enemy. It's another professional trying to do their job to represent their client the best they can. Just because we have an adversarial system, we don't need to be adversarial towards each other." And Kevin was really struck by that and offered his reflections on it. And I agree. I think any of us who have done litigation or appeals for any length of time can name a bunch of people who were far more adversarial than they needed to be. Being a zealous advocate for your client doesn't mean you have to necessarily denigrate or fight with the other side. And I think we're very lucky, in particular in Texas, on the appellate side, because we do have the standards for appellate conduct that really try and eliminate a lot of that. And of course, it doesn't work 100% of the time. But I think that is right. Lawyering is hard. And having an opposing counsel that makes it so much harder really does just add to the stress unnecessarily. When you can do the same job, you can advocate very effectively for your client without being that way. You can disagree without being disagreeable.
Yeah, that was really wise advice, I think, from Skip. And for Skip to have taught Kevin Dubose that lesson, you know, there's a lot of wisdom collectively between those two. And so that was a really great one to hear. So the next tip was from Jason Steed. And Jason's tip was to always read the statute. Jason kind of framed the tip with a problem that he had seen with advocates arguing about statutory language and statutory issues and really citing only two cases. And what we see in our state a lot is, you know, our legislature meets every other year and will amend statutes pretty frequently. And so, you know, one problem with this approach of relying on case law is the statute may have been amended without your knowledge, and you may be relying on old law. And you can see how this would potentially affect your credibility with the court if you're arguing about a statute and language has been changed. So Jason's tip was to always read the statute. He says, you know, let's start with the definitions, which is always a great thing. Read the passages above it and below it and make sure that you really are starting from the language that the legislature has declared to be the law of here in our case, the law of Texas. The same would, of course, apply to federal statutes or any other state, but just don't make the mistake of relying on case law in which the statute actually could have been changed. And one good example of this that I thought of right away, and we may have even discussed it in the episode, I can't recall, is our Texas Citizens Participation Act, or the anti-SLAPP statute here in Texas, which has been amended more frequently in the last couple of sessions and has had some actually very significant changes made, that changing, you know, things that would be outcome determinative on whether the statute applies or not. So that was a really great bit of advice from Jason. I was really glad to have him give it.
Our next tip comes from Rachel Stinson, who was both a former state and federal law clerk, and actually, I think, career attorney in the federal system for a little while too. And her tip was essentially, mind the microphone. And I think it's a great reminder for all of us as in-person proceedings have kind of picked back up and are moving toward normal. And it's just that, especially in federal court, but I think it's worth remembering in state court too, there may always be a microphone on. And Rachel talked about when she was working in the federal courthouse with Judge Hanks, both on phone calls and when people were in the courtroom, there's microphones and you pick up and hear a lot of things that go on in the courtroom, even when there's no staff out there. When there's no judge on the bench, you know, they hear a lot of things from the counsel that just sort of talk freely out there. And counsel probably doesn't realize that that's getting sent back to the chambers and back to the staff area. So just remember, anytime you're in a courthouse, whether it's state or federal, just assume that there may be a mic on that's transmitting somewhere back into the courtroom, and just mind what you say and mind the things that you say about your case, about the people involved, about the judge, any of that kind of stuff in particular.
Providing surety bonds for court-related matters is a very niche industry, and there are very few appeal bond specialists who are as experienced as Court Surety Bond Agency. Whether the client is a sophisticated entity or an individual involved in litigation for the first time, CSBA uses its more than 110 years of combined surety experience handling appeal bonds to provide first-class service to its clients. For more information, visit courtsurety.com. Our next tip comes from Mia Lorick, and Justice Rebecca Huddle from the Texas Supreme Court echoed these sentiments. And so we'll kind of treat those together. But Mia, her tip essentially was that just to be nice and respectful to everyone that you encounter in law practice. Everyone's working hard, trying to, especially as younger lawyers, you're trying to build your reputation and build your career. And you see stories online all the time about how, you know, it takes a lifetime to build a reputation and about 5 seconds to destroy it, especially in the age of Twitter and Facebook, because there's, you know, there are no secrets anymore. And so Mia suggests just being kind to everyone that you come across in your law practice, such as colleagues at work, law students, your paralegal, your assistant, or I think very importantly, court staff, or maybe a parking attendant at the courthouse was somebody that Mia mentioned. You know, the practice of law, yes, there's over 100,000 lawyers in our state, but it's very localized. And, you know, I think Jody and I both have this experience of there are a lot of local lawyers that we know, and people do get reputations, both good and bad. And so if you just follow the default of treating everybody you know with respect and civility, kind of taking the lawyer's creed to the next level, I guess, Jody, then that will take you very, very far in your career. I can kind of give a personal anecdote to this. When I was a young lawyer and starting my career in Dallas, I made a point to get to know some of the what were called the civil transcript staff at the Dallas County Courthouse. They were the ones that were responsible for collecting clerk's records. And somebody had given me this advice. And of course, it, I think would have been in my nature anyway, but I just took a little extra time to visit with them because, you know, back in the days when you actually had sometimes had to go to the courthouse to get the transcript. And that small kindness really was never lost on the person that I visited with that day. In fact, to this day, more than 25 years later, I still hear from him on Facebook. He'll sign in to wish me a happy birthday. And I haven't talked to him in probably 2 decades. So it's amazing, really, just it goes to show you, you just never know when that act of being kind and treating someone with respect, even a difficult situation, can come back and pay dividends later in your career. It's just the best approach to take. And Justice Huddle echoed that. She said, really, what matters most at the end of the day is how you treat people. And her advice was just to be kind. And even when you lose or something goes wrong, you know, she suggested just picking yourself up and trying to be kind to people and trying to move on the best you can. And I think that's one of the things that helps us all survive the stress of our occupation sometimes. So another good bit of advice there.
I totally agree. Well, our next one comes from Chief Justice Bridget McCormack of the Michigan Supreme Court, and her tip is to be the court's thought partner. And she's talking in particular at a state's highest court with discretionary review, but I think it applies equally at any appellate court. And she said, basically, look, if you're arguing at our state's highest court, you need to show up and be ready to be our thought partner. The reason that the court took your case is because it was hard, and that there's some questions that they're not sure about. And so she said, the sooner that you can let us get to those and work through us, the better it's going to be. You know, from her perspective, so often she said she can decide what the rule of law ought to be and still be left with not knowing how that actually decides the case. And so the best advocates in her estimation were the ones that would help the court work through those questions and answer those questions honestly and thoughtfully and kind of help them come to the right decision for the right reasons. And I think that that's a great reminder because we all want to argue our side and we all want to stick to our guns. But if you're not helping the court reach the result that they need to reach and explain how your side still wins under that perspective, then you're doing a disservice because they may not want to adopt all of your arguments, but that doesn't mean you still can't pull off a victory.
I love that phraseology, being the court's thought partner. It really does kind of dovetail back into some of the tips we've already covered. And kind of puts in this image in your mind of everyone's kind of helping to advance the case toward a decision. And so that's a really neat phrase, I think.
I agree.
The next tip is from Professor Jonah Perlin from Georgetown. And Jonah's tip was to know your audience. We've all been given this advice to know your audience, especially when you're writing a brief. Be thinking about the court that's making the decision or the judge that's making the decision and what would be useful and effective in advocating before that decider. But Jonah makes the point in a broader way. He says, you have to know who your audience is to be a good lawyer, but it could affect who you're writing to. Your audience could be your opposing counsel, or your audience could be the client or the opposing business entities or business clients. And so he really kind of takes a step back and suggests thinking about, you know, who's going to be seeing your work product, who's going to be hearing the words that come out of your mouth, and who it is that you're trying to influence. A court is the most natural audience for what we do, but Jonah reminds us that it's not limited to that. And another twist that he put on this was, he says, well, if you don't have an audience, go and get one. And he's a great example of this, because his suggestion is one way for lawyers to make it in the 21st century and to become known and to be able to market tastefully is to do so like he's done, which is on social media and in a positive way. Again, keeping that with that theme of being positive and treating folks respectfully. Jonah thinks, and I think he's right, that if you put yourself out there in an honest, sort of truthful way, then you're trying to help people, that you can write for your own audience eventually and sort of build a tribe that will ultimately a lot of rewards in your career. And so I think that's an interesting twist on sort of an old theme that Jonah offered us there.
I agree with that. I feel like that's kind of what we've tried to do with this podcast, honestly. It's kind of find our own tribe. And I think we definitely have. I mean, the fact that we're still here after 100 episodes speaks to that.
I'm still just blown away.
Yeah, no, I am too. I mean, I really am. It's just amazing. Well, our next tip is from Zach Wolf, who talks about finding your niche, whether it's in appellate practice or something else. And Zach was talking in the context, particularly of solo practice and specializing with that. But I think his point, and he made it broader and more applicable to just appellate practice or any practice. And it is, you know, find your niche. If you want to be successful, you need to have people know who you are and know what you do. You kind of want to be the top one or two people that pop into someone's head when a particular problem comes up. And if you're just an appellate lawyer, then your chances of being one or two maybe aren't that high. But if you're an appellate lawyer who does, say, discovery mandamuses or, you know, some particular niche, then you're a lot more likely to be that person's first or second call on those issues. And so, you know, just kind of developing your brand, developing your expertise, and making sure that that gets communicated out to people that, hey, this person knows what they're talking about when it comes to X or Y, instead of just being, you know, generic appellate lawyer, really may increase your chances of being a successful practitioner. And I think that's great to remember, because it is so easy to get lost in the idea of, well, we do appeals. Well, what kind of appeals? Well, whatever kind of appeals someone wants to bring to us. And that may be true. And at the same time, also not going to get you a whole lot of business, because, you know, people may not think about you when it comes to a specific type of appeal that comes up. So I think that that's a great tip from Zach.
I'm super glad that we included that on the list, because I've been thinking about that ever since we had that conversation with Zach, that so many of us, I mean, we do all know appellate lawyers who have been successful at this, who have developed sort of a subspecialty like that. And once you get there, and it is an issue of personal branding, I think. I don't think that's really disputable, that, you know, once your name gets attached to being the discovery mandamus person, and that's, I don't think that's either one of us specifically, but, you know, I know a few, it really is powerful for you to be top of mind, you know, to be included in that top one or two. I think it really can help your business development and just your overall career. It's an important thing for, I think, younger lawyers starting out to keep in mind. I think we all, you know, I think we sort of develop subspecialties naturally over time doing this kind of work. But for younger lawyers just starting out, I think it's really good advice for those folks to kind of keep that in the back of their mind, that, hey, if there's a specific area that you're interested in, take a look at developing that as sort of a subspecialty. And you might wind up being very successful at that, it being a really good move for your career. So the next tip is from Bree Buchanan, who was recently on our show, and her tip essentially was to make time for human contact. And Bree started off talking about how many lawyers, but appellate lawyers specifically, are introverts. And so even introverts need human connection, or we don't function as well as we would otherwise. I'll raise my hand and say, hey, introvert here, I can speak to this specifically. It's and being married to an extrovert is a special challenge, I think, for introverts. But we can have, that's a separate conversation. but extroverts, you know, generally will gather energy and feed off of being around other people and having that human contact. And introverts don't operate that way. One of Bree's points was that introverts aren't as resilient. They don't bounce back as quickly. I guess we have longer memories of our mistakes, maybe. Maybe we take things a little more personally than extroverts do. And so you put that together with our natural inclination, maybe to spend more time by ourselves and deep in thought, it can really lead to some problem thought patterns if we're not careful. And so Bree's tip was, I think this is excellent. I need to implement this today. But her tip was, her advice was, get out a pen and a piece of paper and write down the names of three people that bring a smile to your face. And her idea is, it's okay to get on a Zoom call or something with that person, but you know, something beyond a text, something beyond just a direct message on Twitter or email or a Facebook message. And by having that sort of direct human interaction, you know, you're building yourself up. You're sort of, this sounds kind of corny to say, but you're nourishing your soul in a way that you really can't do online. And this is my own personal experience. I don't mind sharing. Bree says you build your resiliency and your well-being capital by having these kinds of personal, positive, meaningful interactions. And it can happen organically and it's great, but really it's like so many things in life, you have to be purposeful and really prioritize it. And so think of someone that puts a smile on your face and intentionally create the space to connect with them. And I think that's a good move for the mental health of introverts like me.
100% agree. And it is. And I think particularly COVID, I think, has illustrated that for a lot of us. And honestly, I'm glad we started this podcast when we did, because that kind of turned into that for me by and large for a long time, because it was a break that I knew once or twice a week I was going to get an hour to just talk about something else with interesting people. And so it was kind of a great way to build some resilience and well-being capital, as Bree put it.
Yeah, it is nice. I mean, it's worth mentioning that, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what helped us get started with the podcast and we've kept it going. But I'm so glad personally to have been doing a whole lot more out in the real world, including some live court appearances and conferences and so forth. It really has, I think, made a big difference for me personally. And so, but we now, you know, we've talked about technology and stuff on the show before, and we now have everyone who's familiar with these tools. And so it is easier to get together in a very informal way, just coffee over Zoom, if you want to do that. But I think I'm trying to do more in person myself and take Bree's advice to heart generally, because it really is important, especially as long as we're kind of stuck in that zone where we just didn't know what was going to happen. There was so much uncertainty, and having that kind of human interaction, I think, does help increase your resiliency, and it's just good for you overall. So that was a great tip, I thought.
Definitely. Well, our last kind of formal tip comes from Professor Aaron Busby. So we managed to cover both Busbys on our top 10 list. And it is about what she calls, or got from a colleague, the Ark of Despair, which sounds like the saddest Indiana Jones movie. But I think it's a great term. And it's one that I think perfectly encapsulates something that every appellate lawyer that I know goes through on a regular basis. And her example of the Ark of Despair is, you know, you get a new case, you start working on it and you think, oh, this is great. We're going to win. This is going to be awesome. Like, I see all the problems. The trial court totally messed this up. 100% chance we're going to be successful on appeal. And then you start working on it. You research, you dig into the cases, you dig into the record, you see where the other side has good points, and you finally start thinking, I need to withdraw. Like, we're going to lose this case. Our arguments are basically frivolous. There's no way we can win. It's horrible. And she said, that is the point where you're at the bottom of the Ark of Despair. And then you keep researching, you keep going through it, you start writing. And almost always, by the time you get to the point where the brief is filed, you're thinking, yeah, we're going to win. This is amazing. We're absolutely right. There's no way we could get this wrong. And she said, that's the point where you're back at the top of the Ark of Despair. And then comes oral argument. And there may be multiple arcs of despair in the oral argument process. And then I have personally felt this. I have gone through this with other attorneys that I've helped get ready for oral argument. And her takeaway from that was, look, it's an important part of the process. You can't have a good brief until you've gone all the way to the bottom of the Ark of Despair and seen all the problems, because you won't have dealt with everything that the other side has to throw at you, and that you won't incorporate those into your brief. And she said, you know, as a professor, she's had a number of students come to her and say, I was working on a brief and I went through the arc of despair and it was terrible. And she said, it's her best advice to students, though, is just know that that's part of the process. And it's part of the process to get the best possible product. You kind of have to go through the wilderness to come back out to the clearing at the end of it and feel good about what you're filing. And I did not have that term in my vocabulary, but I've used it a number of times since we recorded her episode because it is 100% a description of the process of just about everything I've ever written.
I could not agree more. When I heard her describe that arc that way, it made perfect sense to me. And it just had never occurred to me before, but it is spot on 100%. My goal in a case is always by the time I finish a brief or by the time I'm finished preparing for oral argument, you know, you want to hit that high point in the arc again. And the way I had described that to myself, I guess, somewhat colorful terms was I always wind up believing in my own BS, but it's not BS. I mean, it's more than that. But to me, this is a perfect description of that mental process that we go through because you're having to not only build up your side, but kind of take apart the other side. And you like to think that there's a right answer in there somewhere, but we know that as lawyers, we work in the gray area, you know, more often than not. And so there's always room for criticism. There's always a counter argument. And there's a reason why we have dissents in the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court, because, you know, there's not always a right answer. So that's a very useful construct, I think, for just to keep in mind as we go through our day-to-day work. That takes us to the end of our tips. We had a few more than 10, so it's not truly a top 10 list. But one thing that I intend to do is we're going to have the videos of those recordings edited. And as we release this episode, my goal is to at least once a day after the episode comes out, we're going to release these tips possibly in order, but I won't guarantee that. Just so you can get your own personal view of exactly what our guests had to say and don't rely on our paraphrasing of it. I think we've done a fair job of it and offered some commentary on it along the way. So follow us on Twitter if you're not already, TexApLawPod on Twitter, and keep an eye on our account. We'll post the videos of these. And I just want to say thanks again to all of our listeners for the confidence you've shown in us, the fact that you're willing to spend time with us. And please continue listening, telling your friends. If you find the show valuable, we'd love to keep doing it. And there's no indication right now, there's no reason why we wouldn't keep doing it. As I said at the beginning, I look forward to the next 100 episodes. We still manage to find things to talk about, even after doing this now over 100 times with episodes we've got coming up and in the can. So,
no, that's exactly right.
Thank you all for your willingness to spend time with us. We really appreciate you as our audience, and we'll look forward to talking again soon.
That's right. Well, and in closing, I do have to say we didn't cover my favorite war story, but it was from Kent Rutter. So go back in our back catalog and listen to Kent's war story, because I really think it was probably one of the best.
Yeah, we really didn't get into war stories because of the retelling of those. I think there would have been something lost in the translation. But
yeah, that's why I'm just going to put that out there.
I'll add one that stuck with me, and that's Mark Trachtenberg's A War Story About the Longest Appellate Argument Ever. So go back and listen to that. Maybe we'll add the videos of those just as bonus content. So, all right. Well, Jody, I appreciate you. Enjoy doing this with you. And
same here. Let's
keep on keeping on.
Thanks for listening to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast, presented by Butler Snow. If you're enjoying the show, please recommend it to your colleagues or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate everyone who has rated the show and otherwise supported us so far. To stay in touch, suggest topics, ask questions, or express interest in coming on the show, visit us online at texapplawpod.com or tweet us at texapplawpod. The views expressed by the participants on this podcast are their own and not those of their law firms, courts, or employers. Nothing you hear on this show establishes an attorney-client relationship or is legal advice.